This ROFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star
Safari.
Deep Sky Adventures.
In the universe.
Deep Sky.
Deep Sky Adventures.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star
Safari.
And welcome to another edition of Why Space. We are actually recording from the middle of the storm that is engulfing Wellington right now, with flight cancelled all day and all sorts of things happening. And it's been quite a good time to ponder on the weather on Earth, linking it to what happens on other planets, and actually thinking, in a way, even with those like really, really big winds, it's quite a breeze, for example, to the winds of Jupiter or to the storms of Neptune. So our solar system, just like everything else here, was formed about 5 billion years ago, and we are made of the same stuff. So those things that are happening, winds and rain and all these atmospheric phenomena, they're all kind of like same iterations of the same stuff. If you kind of like think about across our solar system, but when it comes to a day so bad as today, you sit down and wonder what's going on. So this month was very interesting because it debuted with this really, really big storm. And the king of storms, Jupiter, it's now gone from our sight. So we can just glimpse planet Jupiter in the evenings on the beginning of the month, and then it will get lower and lower on the horizon and sink. And it will disappear behind the glaze of the sun. And in the morning sky, however, we can see beautiful, beautiful Venus, and we can see a Mercury, and we can see a Saturn, which are three wonderful planets. And so maybe we can think about stargazing in the morning as a alternative to stargazing in the evening, which is what everybody's doing most of the times, unless you're a morning bird. And then we have, in the evening sky, we have Mars. Mars is continuing to be the amazing planet that it is. And we also have the center of the galaxy that is coming up. And that is beautiful. So we can see very, very many wonderful objects out there in the evening sky. The center of the galaxy is full of beautiful objects that we can see in binoculars, we can see in telescopes, we can admire with our eyes. And from the Wairarapa Dark Sky Reserve, where the sky is so beautiful and clear, we can see it as it is rising, probably about an hour and a half after sunset. And if you stay up a few hours after that, or all night long, you can see it going through the sky, just slowly moving as the Earth actually turns at 1,240 kilometers an hour, as calculated from our latitude here in Wairarapa, which the speed obviously changes as you are on different sides of the world. For example, the equator is something of around 1,600 kilometers an hour, and obviously at the pole gets near zero, and yet we don't really feel anything because Earth pulls us down with its gravity. So not the same thing can be said about the wind outside. But There have been some really interesting discoveries in the last month. I think one of the most interesting discoveries was that one of the planets, exoplanets, which are planets that are outside of our solar system, got in the news media by its name K2-18b, which is a really interesting name. The little b stands for planet, so that's what the name means, and the other numbers are numbers given to stars that are discovered by telescopes. So long time ago, stars had names, proper names, and now they just have catalog numbers, which is fair enough, I guess, because there are very, very many stars in the sky. Anything between 100 billion and 400 billion stars in our galaxy, the Milky Way. So you can imagine finding 100 to 400 billion names for all these planets, every single one of them having an individual one. But I think numbers are good. And K2-18b was a very interesting discovery, because these scientists, they looked at the atmosphere from that planet, and they saw a molecule that here on Earth is only made by life. It doesn't mean anything. In astrobiology is like any other science, is a science. And so if discoveries are being made, they have to be the scientists have to be absolutely sure that these discoveries are real. And especially with a claim like that, it's not the first one. It's not the first time when a scientist thought they would have found life somewhere else. I'm not here to say it is or it isn't. I think what I'm trying to say is that we need more evidence and repeated evidence to be able to say that planet indeed has life on it. So the molecule is dimethyl sulfide, and it's associated here on Earth with bacteria and plankton in the ocean. So it is understandable why people get very, very excited. And it's mostly associated with that. So it doesn't mean that can't be made through other processes, but mostly here on Earth is made by life. And so to be sure of a detection like that, as I was saying, we need to have repeated proof. So I think we're at the stage where the repeated proof is being gathered right now. If we look back in time, many times people got super excited. For example, in the 1990s, NASA had a press conference where they said that they discovered a meteorite in Antarctica. It was a very famous Martian meteorite, ALH 84001, that had tiny little squiggles inside that looked like microfossils. But now the latest news is that whatever that thing was, it was not done by biology. Very sad. So every time everybody gets excited, it's very sad. When we look at the exoplanets, we normally look at their atmospheres, and what we do detect in these atmospheres are gases, and these are called biosignatures. And so if you have a combination of things that wouldn't normally be present there, so for example, molecular oxygen here on Earth is recycled by things that make photosynthesis, so then everywhere you would find a planet that has molecular oxygen, you would probably want to say that something makes it. Also, methane is an important gas. Methane can be done by bacteria, and don't we know it? We have so many cows here in New Zealand, but also can be done by other things. Volcanoes can have release methane, and even though methane is a biosignature, and we discovered methane on Mars, there's a seasonal variation of methane on Mars. So it would be really amazing if that would be made by some tiny little things caught in the permafrost down there on Mars or somewhere in the rocks, and keep letting us know from there that perhaps there might be something still moving. It would be absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. Now, there is a difference between the search for intelligent life and the search for life, if we can make this difference. So the search for intelligent life is when we're looking for radio signals or laser signals or anything else, or CO2 resulted from industrial processes, or anything that would indicate that there might be a civilization somewhere that has invented their own version of wheel. Though thinking of how universal chemistry is and how universal physics is and how universal biochemistry is and how we see water in space and all these compounds. And recently we saw the building blocks of DNA and RNA in asteroids. I wouldn't be surprised that if there would be a civilization, they would also have a wheel, they would also have cubes and so on. And obviously would have invented math. So we look for these, and so we look for signals, and that's what the SETI Institute is doing, search for extraterrestrial intelligence. That's what SETI stands for, and they've been operating for probably 75 years. That's a long time, a very long time to look for aliens, but that doesn't mean anything, because in the grand scheme of the universe, 75 years is just absolutely nothing. So if we say, okay, we've been looking for aliens for a long time, it's actually no, we've just started looking for aliens. We are only now learning to see how we can detect them. So SETI is looking for intelligence, but then if you look for biosignatures, it doesn't have to be that we're finding intelligent life. It could be just very, very simple life. And here on Earth, very, very simple life existed for about 2 billion years. We had 2 billion years on Earth of just goo. Goo stuff, goo little things, goo bacteria. They weren't really archaea, all of these very, very early life forms and their siblings and relatives. And so just thinking 2 billion years, that's a lot of years. And then something happened here on Earth, the Earth cooled down a lot. And then complex organisms started forming. And then Earth cooled down again about 600 million years ago. And the very first complex multicellular organisms, which means organisms that are made from more than one cell, that are cooperating with each other, and they're functionally diverse. That's when they started forming. And so about 500 million years ago, we had what scientists call the Cambrian explosion, where they found all these strange life forms and all of the fossils that we're finding on the bottom of a sea. So there's a difference. There's a difference between life existing in its vegetative state, which doesn't mean is less extraordinary. So even if we found life on this planet that is now talked about, it would be extraordinary. Even if those things wouldn't be able to communicate with us, it would still be an extraordinary thing, because it would be somewhere else where we found life, whereas right now we haven't found any evidence of that life at all, anywhere whatsoever. So that's pretty sad. Now, the universe is a really big place, and I think one of the things that we need to understand is how big it is. And it is so big that just to go to the nearest star, it takes anything in the likes of about 40,000 years. So that's a lot of years to just travel. And that's with the best technology that we have today, which is pretty crazy, because it's very, very, very far away. And so we're only on the beginning of these discoveries. Another really cute thing that came up in the media, when we went to JPL last year, we had the opportunity to see firsthand these really interesting mini rovers, really, really tiny. And they were just testing them in the Mars yard. And I didn't really notice them on the beginning, because you go there and you look for really big rovers, like the Mars rovers, are enormous, are the size of a, probably a Ute, if you want to compare it like that. These were like some tiny, tiny little things. They're called Cadre, and they're the size of like a microwave oven, kind of like that. And so when we were there, we had the opportunity. I held one of those in my hands, which was pretty cool. Well, now it seems that they have done some very, very successful tests, and they're qualified to go to the moon. These are gonna go to the moon, and they're going to be operated there to see how they work, how they drive. And I think CADRE, it's the short for Cooperative Autonomous Distribution Robotic Exploration, which is a network of tiny little robots talking to each other, and that's very, very important. Also, it's interesting because the spacecraft that landed on the moon lately, they all kind of like landed on the moon and then toppled on one side. So these robots, they are all driving, and they're all going to be equipped with sensors, and they're going to fulfill various functions. And especially now, hopefully, with everybody preparing to go back to the moon, which will be really amazing. Hopefully, there will be no funds cut and anything of the sort. But we do need the best machines that we can get. So Cadre is pretty it's a pretty amazing project. So these rovers, they're very important because they represent the next step in robots that communicate with each other when they're in a mission. So like we have here packs of wolves on Earth, we're going to have packs of rovers on the moon. There were rovers on the moon. People actually drove rovers on the moon, which is pretty pretty amazing that happened. And maybe that shape of the rovers is actually the best thing that can land and not go on the side in that lunar environment. That is, it's got less gravity, definitely less gravity that what we have here on Earth. So another really interesting thing that happened in the last month was that three astronauts from the Chinese space station have returned to Earth. And so, like, if you're a stargazer, and or even if you're not a stargazer, but sometimes you look up, if you want to see satellites, if you want to see a lot of action happening, the best time to look for it is just after sunset. So probably 1 hour, 1 hour and a half after sunset. That's when you see the most action out there. And so often at Star Safari, we see the International Space Station, which is now having seen it for so many times, you can recognize it very easily. But there is another dot going really, really fast, as 28,000 kilometers per second, which is the speed that they go up in the sky, which is the Chinese space station. And so the Chinese space station just had these three astronauts landing back after 6 months on a spent in space, which I think is fantastic. Is yet another dot with humans up there, other than the International Space Station, that goes around the Earth in 90 minutes. It's got a very cute name. It's called the Heavenly Palace, Tiangong. That's what Tiangong means. And they do a lot of research, just like in the International Space Station. They do all sorts of microgravity research and advancing science in general, as they these space stations do, because the environment up there in space is very, very, very different than the environment is that is here on Earth. So so great things are happening, hopefully going into the future. And another news that was also it was super duper discussed was the all-female crew going into space, including Katy Perry, which went to space and then she came back. And I have a colleague who came up with this concept where people who see Earth for the first time from space, or who are doing this job of space science communication, they their perception of Earth changes. And so he was arguing that you know, because many people have commented on these astronauts going to space, and they weren't very sure whether that was a good thing or a bad thing. But he was arguing that it is actually an extraordinary thing for anybody who goes to space, even if it's for half an hour. The fact that you were able to see Earth from space, it really, really changes you. So I really hope those people who went there came back better humans, and they will put more efforts into changing humankind, and instead of perhaps having so many wars and so many people killing each other, we can maybe grow up and see what we can do to take humanity forward, and make sure that we're having a good life. We can have this really good life right now, but unfortunately people are very busy doing other things that are not the best. So until this very bright future, the only thing that we can do ourselves is to look up at the sky. As I was saying, this time of the year, the center of the galaxy is coming, rising from the horizon. It's really beautiful. You can see the dark lines of dust in the arm of the Milky Way that stretches from Scorpius all the way to Orion. Orion is setting very early, so make sure that you say goodbye to it until next time, when we will see it in the morning sky. And also this time of the year is really interesting, because we have Sirius, the brightest star in the sky, Canopus, the second brightest star in the sky, Alpha Centauri, the third brightest star in the sky, and Arcturus, the fourth brightest star in the sky, all shining in the evening. And maybe the light from these stars will serve as a reminder that we humankind are quite extraordinary when we want. And if we do want to do a lot of good things, when we put our brains together, when we think about a nicer future for humankind, we can do all of this. So I will leave you with this thought. And until next time, I wish you clear skies.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Deep Sky Adventures.
In the universe.
Deep Sky.
Deep Sky Adventures.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari. Star Safari.